back. WNST Towson, Baltimore, and WNST Baltimore Positive. We've doubled up in the studio. It's been about 9 months since Don Moeller and I have been together doing a little bye week. I mean, maybe call this Baltimore Positive bye.
Baltimore, at a glance, these are...
We deserve a bye week, right?
At a glance segments, we're sitting in the studio. We've got the famous Christmas story lamp behind us.
I'm going to Cleveland. The game's going to mean something, too.
All is good. Brian Sears, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Brian Sears from the Daily Record, government reporter. BP Sears is the way to find him. We're doing some bonus segments. Brian, it's great to have you on. We've been doing these things. It's more like sit down for an hour. We're trying to sort of condense a little bit here and talk about some things and certainly talk to some experts about stuff. And Kerwin has been so much on our minds. And I guess over the next 3 to 6 months, things are going to be happening. We've talked to experts. And I know you've been out on that beat as much as anyone. And the governor sort of bearing down against it. There's certainly a pushback with three quarters of the people in the state supporting it at this point. You're out feeling some temperature for this. Give us a little feel on what you're hearing out there.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, I mean, we talk about the fact that this is kind of ramping up now, but really we've been talking about Kerwin for the better part of 3 years. The interesting thing that comes out of that Goucher poll is that the vast majority, almost 8 in 10 people, don't really know anything sort of specific about Kerwin. And I think we should be really careful. Malia Cromer would probably smack me in the back of the head if I wasn't careful about this.
Because she loves to smack Nestor around, so that's okay.
I deserve it.
My conversations with Malia, you know, she's very specific about what her poll sort of says and what it doesn't say. And in terms of the support, what it says is that there is a general belief in Maryland, even among Republicans, interestingly enough. That they would be willing to spend more money to be taxed a little more if it went directly to education. But the caveat there in her question is improving education. If they felt that more money would actually mean an improvement in outcomes, and that's where the battle lines are being drawn on this right now.
Well, you know, I go back far enough. We were trying to save the racetrack 30 years ago, right, Bri? You know, and part of all the casino money, part of all the slot money, it was all education. We're going to make the schools better. Well, the casinos are here and the schools aren't better, right? So that's the taxpayer in me saying, what is this? And really, this is incumbent upon the people who support Kerwin, and we've had Bill Ferguson, we've had David Hornberg, we've had a lot of people, Ben Cardin, you know, I was in the car the other day listening to him, Sarbanes as well, that it's incumbent upon all of us in the coming months to make it popular, to make it palatable, and then for the accountability side over the next decade to make sure that it works, to make sure that we're creating, as I like to tell Don, better human beings.
Yeah, Brian... Looking at it from your perspective, and in the 20 minutes or so we have, we'll try to talk on a number of subjects, including how far you and I go back. Did you ever think that you would actually be the elder statesman? You're becoming one of the elder statesmen down there now, right?
I think I'm becoming older. I don't know that I'm becoming statesman. You know, like that probably is. That last one's probably up for debate, but yeah, I just finished my 18th session in
amazing
covering the General Assembly, and that makes me a little long in the tooth down there.
Well, before we get out of here later in the show, we're going to talk about one of my favorite stories. I think you'll remember is when you schooled a young reporter down there on the do's and don'ts of sartorial splendor when you're covering issues at the state. Obviously, you do remember, but go back to Kerwin, Brian, as a reporter, you've probably written, I don't know, dozens, if not more, articles on Kerwin. And, you know, Nestor and I are trying to do our part through Baltimore Positive to educate people. Had a great discussion this morning with Senator Bill Ferguson. Why do you think, as you said, a couple years into this thing, basically nobody in the state knows anything about Kerwin?
Look, I think it's probably it's as true about Kerwin as it is about anything else. I think given the busyness of people's lives, it's really hard to keep track of the day-to-day intricacies of public policy. And it really sort of gets down to, for a lot of people, you know, who are running their kids to school and running their kids to soccer practice and, you know, and taking the dog out and doing all of the things that they have to do. You know, keeping up with the quarter turn of the screw every day is probably a little more difficult, and most people really are sort of bottom line. You know, when we get to the end, tell me what it does, tell me what it's going to cost, tell me if it's going to work. So I think that this is probably true of just about any kind of long-term public policy debate that we see.
Well, what will you be looking for, Brian? I mean, you guys will be down there. You got all your buddies down there in the basement. You'll be comparing notes. What will you be looking for in the next month, a couple months leading up to the General Assembly in January to try to see where this is, how this is going to play out? What are your cues?
So one of the things that I'm going to be keenly interested in is watching. Right now, I still don't sense that there's a tremendous amount of buy-in from local government. Again, we're 3 years in, and we still don't really know what the full cost of local government are and what they're going to have to do. And what, you know, some of the numbers that we saw in the last week really sort of talk about the fact that some jurisdictions like Prince George's County and Baltimore City will be found to be fairly far behind in terms of tens and hundreds of millions of dollars that they might have to find to try and just to catch up. That's going to be interesting. We're also going to be watching the final price tag, how they cobble together, how they're going to pay for this, you know, between finding money, you know, money and savings in the budget, and whether or not they're going to actually need to raise revenue. I think the other thing that's going to be really interesting to watch is this battle that's shaping up between the governor and the teachers union on how this is going to be branded, with the governor talking specifically about the amount of money it's going to cost and the concerns about accountability. It's almost, I don't have any specific knowledge of this, but we know that the governor likes to poll, and seeing that Goucher poll was really instructive to me and makes me wonder if the governor hadn't been looking at these numbers for some time.
Well, if the temperature changes on this thing, right, then maybe his temperature would change. But Brian, you tell me, by the way, Brian P. Sears can be found at BP Sears ad on Twitter. He, of course, at the Daily Record, a government reporter, and her down the dial, and anywhere intelligent folks here locally are talking about politics. I said to Don earlier, does he want to be the anti-education governor? That doesn't seem like a real nice legacy for a two-term Republican governor that's trying to maybe go up the chain even further. And who knows what's going to happen with Trump maybe going to prison before next year's election, before it's all over with, that he wouldn't want to be comfortably in that seat and not be the guy who raised taxes. But it seems to me, if you're going to raise taxes for anything, maybe on that side of the aisle, war, they love that, but schools would seem to be, you go to Cumberland or you go to Ocean City, isn't that sort of universal? Doesn't everybody want a better school?
I mean, I think it's going to be a really interesting line here between walking this line between not being the anti-education governor, as you put it, and I think that will be how some people will try to portray it, and not running afoul of his commitments of trying to be fiscally responsible.
So, Brian, do you view?
I'm not sure how that's going to shake out, And look, I mean, public opinion could shift. It could shift and become more positive. But you know, if we're talking about a tax increase, it could also shift the opposite direction, where people decide that they don't really want to be taxed that much.
Well, the governor's putting out, Brian, obviously and evidently preparing, and I'm assuming you'll be writing about this, evidently preparing to use political action committees, what folks like to refer to as dark money, to frame the debate. And I mean, I'll ask you this as the expert. Seems to me that if we're going to have millions of dollars in so-called dark money to frame the debate and make it all about tax increases, the challenge for the education advocates gets much, much more difficult. Do you read it that same way?
I think it's not even just the money. I mean, one of the things that you also have to acknowledge is that, you know, the governor is very disciplined. He's really good at messaging. I mean, we saw that in 2014 with the so-called rain tax. I think that there is a lot of concern there for what the governor, you know, the governor has leveraged social media in a way that we haven't seen previous governors do. So I think that there's a lot of things to watch here. And the money's just sort of the tip of it. And to be honest with you, you know, we saw the teachers union throw $500,000 at this at ads over the last couple of weeks. And I'm one of those ones, like, I was watching for the ads, and I finally, about 2 weeks into the campaign, caught an ad during the 6 o'clock news. So I'm not sure how much traction they got with the ads, but you can imagine the governor wants to raise at least $2 million to throw at this. He's going to time these things and make sure people see them.
It's so interesting, Brian, that you bring that point up. And Nestor and I chat about it all the time. Nestor is someone who toys with perhaps at one day, you know, jumping into the arena and thinking about becoming a public official and trying to make a difference that way. And one of the things we talk about is how much money it takes to move the needle. Because my take, and I have, you know, lots of friends involved in MSEA and certainly on the teacher side of the equation, my entire family is involved in education one way or the other. What you just said, with $500,000, it sounds like a lot of money. I can tell you from having been involved in gubernatorial campaigns, county executive campaigns, that's not enough money to move the needle. It's going to have to be moved in another way, particularly if the other side comes out, as you said, with millions of dollars.
Yeah, I think that's right, and so one of the things that that supporters of this are doing is they're getting out in the communities, they're having these town halls. I think these are good ideas to, you know, if you're going out to all the jurisdictions, you're doing sort of the grassroots building of it. But probably the people you're reaching at this point are people who are already, you know, fairly informed and supporters. You know, but with the idea that these folks are going to be your surrogates and carry your standard out into the communities.
Now, Brian Sears is here, Daily Record government reporter. You can find him at BP Sears on Twitter. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I was going to say we've got a limited amount of time, Brian, lots and lots of topics. One of the things in the past, by the time people hear this, there will be more and more discussion about the Preakness, a recently announced deal. I know you've been working the phones. What are you hearing about the Preakness deal?
Look, we've had even now. I mean, the news just keeps coming. I mean, now we have Frank Stronach weighing in and telling the Baltimore Sun that, you know, he's not so, you know, he doesn't like the deal. He thinks it should be amended. It's a continuation of this family.
Here
fight,
we go.
Internally with the Stronachs.
So we have live in front of us. Family feud, right?
The real issue
is
the family feud, right? I mean, right. You know, that's not been a dirty right. secret. That's been out in front of this the last 2 or 3 years, that getting a deal, I mean, it's almost like the baseball deal, right? Like I'm chasing John Angelos around 2 weeks ago. He's not even really in a position to make any decisions. That's part of the landlocked part of this is you don't have a whole lot of willing participants, do you?
Yeah, and you know, and the other thing that we still haven't heard, as you know, as we're having this conversation, is we don't really know where the governor is on this, and that's going to be important. I mean, the governor has in the past expressed some concern about the cost of this, but because of the way that the costs are being incurred in this current proposal, there's not a lot of, you know, Maggie McIntosh told me that, you know, she was pretty impressed with the fact that there wasn't a tremendous effect on the state budget. That might be enough to get the governor to be interested and support this plan. But as of yet, we still haven't heard.
Yeah, the last numbers I saw, Brian, correct me because you're always up to speed on these things. The last number I saw to support the bonds was about $17 million a year. Is that the working
roughly,
number?
I think we're talking total project $375 right. million. But yeah, I think your numbers are about right.
Yeah, about $17 million a year.
And the money's good right now. This is a good time to be doing that, right?
It's a good time. Of course, I guess, Brian, and again, you've always been, I joke with folks, you're the fiscal watchdog. When you covered Baltimore County, you were the guy that didn't want just the summary of the budget. You wanted all the detail. And for some reason, you liked staying up till 3 and 4 in the morning highlighting specific budget detail. So you get budgets. You understand budgets. When you look at this upcoming General Assembly, we got what? School construction. We've got Kerwin. We've got Preakness. What other big issues do we have coming down the road?
Well, look, I mean, I think, you know, we still have the ongoing issues of dealing with the widening gap between what the state is programmed to spend, the so-called mandated spending, and what the state brings in. And there really is still a gap. Spending is always estimated to increase in Maryland by about roughly 5%. And currently the projections on the amount of money that the state is expected to bring in, you know, the growth is about 3.5%. So, you know, a percent and a half isn't a lot. It doesn't sound like a lot. But when you're talking about a budget of, you know, a general fund budget of $20 billion, I mean, we're almost talking real money here.
Brian, no, absolutely, it's real money. It's going to be interesting. I know you're licking your chops, kind of thing that you love to dig into. In a few minutes we have left, you've been down there. You said 18 years. You've never been down there without the two mics.
Yeah, this is last session towards the end and the beginning of this session are really going to be very different for me and for a lot of us.
Talk about the legacy, and certainly Mike Miller's still there. We all wish him well. Seems to be doing well in his treatments, as you know, engaged as ever. But I think it's safe to say that Mike Bush, universally respected on both sides of the aisle, the former speaker. Talk about the legacy of both of those men and what you've seen over 18 years.
Oh, look, I mean, I think that, you know, you've seen them, especially in times where they've had to deal with Republican governors. And remember, I mean, they've had in their time, they have had three Republican, three terms of Republican governor, including the two with Larry Hogan. They have essentially been the standard bearers for for Democratic priorities in the state, and in a lot of ways have pushed pushed forward those priorities, even in the face of a Republican governor who didn't always want to go along, and you know, certainly we've seen Larry Hogan with his share of vetoes that have not, you know, none of, almost very few of them. I think the last time I took a look at the number, I think he'd only had five vetoes that had been sustained, and a couple of those, like the General Assembly, just sort of, it wasn't for lack of wasn't for lack of votes. They just decided that they weren't really interested in particular fights, like a passage of a bill regarding a plan on redistricting, which was probably really more of a message to be sent to the governor rather than an actual veto override plan. Look, I think, you know, it probably we will not see, certainly not in my lifetime, Don, will we probably ever see presiding officers who stay as long as these do. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about wanting to see, shorter turnover. A lot of the legislature is getting younger. These younger legislators are hungry. They want to move up. The gray ceiling makes it more challenging. But we're seeing a lot of that turnover now, and people who want to bring new ideas, and sometimes the wheels of the General Assembly, like any other institution, tend to move a little slow. We get mired in tradition.
Brian Sears is our guest. He's BP Sears, Daily Record government reporter. You can find him out on Twitter, of course, at the Daily Record. Last thing for you. We kind of put this whole Baltimore Positive thing together about 9 months ago in the thoughts of the city and where the city is. And when you say Larry and Hogan, I live at the Inner Harbor. He feels like he's the governor of everything but the city at this point. And I think those criticisms will be coming out next year as we vote for a president around here. We have two elections. There'll be a primary in April. There'll be a whole ramp up to that. Where do you see this next 6 months as we get this mayoral race? We have Brandon Scott. Looks like Jack Young's arming himself. T.J. Smith. I ran into Thiru Vignaraja. I chatted with him for a little while.
Sheila Dixon is
going to be involved. Yeah. So, I mean, we have all these names. To me, locally, even if you live in Harford County, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, Howard County, this is going to be the story in January, February, and March, the part that's not impeaching Trump.
Yeah, look, and I think if you live in any of those jurisdictions that you just mentioned, you do have to be keenly aware of what's going on in the city, because the state does provide a tremendous amount of aid to the city. And so there really is a vested interest. People in Baltimore County are constantly watching what goes on in Baltimore City, and sometimes, you know, sometimes speak about it in not so nice terms. I think that the key issues here are going to be much the same as they are in a lot of other jurisdictions. It's going to be public safety, education, jobs, and in a lot of ways, basic services. I mean, there's, you know, you look at the things that happen, like, you know, water main breaks and these things. I mean, there's a lot of concern, especially in the business community, about just getting basic services right and making things work the way they're supposed to, and in a sense that sometimes we feel like we've gotten away from that.
Brian, thanks a million. I'm not going to let you get away without you schooling Nestor about the day that you grabbed a young reporter and tried to say, we don't do it that way around here.
Just yeah, I've had to do that a few times at Knowings Mills, you know, that I'm 30 years into
this.
So give us
a quick breakdown. We don't need names. We just refresh our memories.
Well, you know, and let me be nice about it. I mean,
no, you don't have to be.
It makes it. I was fortunate enough. I got my first reporting job in late 1987, early 1988. That's the Don and I go back that far.
Amazing.
And you know, for me, it was I learned on the job. I was very green, but I was fortunate enough that I had an editor who every step of the way was very much a mentor and, you know, and sort of dragged me along and taught me how to do it and how to do it right.
Is that Don Doler?
That is Don Doler.
Okay.
And you know, and for me, one of the things that I have tried to do over my career, especially, you know, in covering government and covering the General Assembly, is to try and be a resource to other reporters. And there have been occasions where, you know, like I've quietly pulled a reporter aside and mentioned to them, you know, for example, the dress code in Annapolis, especially when we have some of the younger reporters who are coming out of college who may not be aware coming in that, you know, the dress code on the floor of the General Assembly is a tie and a jacket and a sport coat for men. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's for me, I see it, if you do it in the right way, as a kindness. You're not trying to embarrass them. You're just trying to bring them along, especially with a lot of these younger reporters that coming out of, you know, who are working as interns out of college. Like, I tell them all the time when I go and speak to their classes, like, you come into the General Assembly, you're not a college kid covering, you know, you're not a college kid. You are part of the State House Press Corps. And you want people to, you have a short time to make an impression, and so you want to do everything you can to make people take you as seriously as possible.
Give people real quick, Brian, you're the sergeant at arms, you're bringing these kids along. I know we have to go. Describe for folks what you all affectionately call the pit. I don't know if Nestor's been down to the pit. Describe the pit.
Well, you know, the pit these days looks a lot like, I mean, if you walked in and you didn't see the rest of us down there, we're about one pair of khakis short of being an office that you'd find Jake from State Farm in. It looks a lot these days like a call center. But back when I first started working, it looked much the same way as when Washington resigned his commission. The carpet was pretty old. The desks might have been older. We tell stories all the time, even on Facebook. There was a story a little bit a while back about a mouse that fell out of the ceiling at the White House.
That immediately
had a bunch of us laughing because we remember the days when, you know, when mice used to run across Dory Berman's desk when she had my job at the Daily Record. We remember a much a dirtier, dingier time.
There you go. Brian Sears, Nestor Aparicio.
Daily Record. He is BP Sears out on Twitter and at the Daily Record. Great catching up with you, Brian. We hope to see you between here and Annapolis sometime soon.
Thanks so much. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks,
you
Brian.
Got it. We are Baltimore Positive. Go visit our sponsors from Jennings and State Fair out in Catonsville down to Fadley's in Lexington Market. Get yourself a gigantic crab cake. Check out all of our work at Baltimore Positive. Doing a little bi-week activity around here, a little bonus Baltimore Positive bi-week activity. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Baltimore Positive. And we never stop talking Baltimore sports and Baltimore Positive.